Welcome to the Profit Cash Growth Podcast. This is the podcast for six and seven figure business owners who are looking to grow a financially successful business. My co-host, Claire Hancock, is a finance director, chartered accountant, and entrepreneur. And every week, I'll be exploring guidance and frameworks designed to help you increase your profits, improve your cash flow, and grow your business. Today on the podcast, we review the budget. And was it a budget for small businesses, or was it just a lot of political show and tell? So yesterday saw the Chancellor deliver his budget, and on Tuesday we gave our predictions. And bit of a damp squib, Claire, or?
Yeah, 100%, I thought.
I don't like to be able to predict everything perfectly just 2 days before, but it is a bit disappointing.
One of the things that we've talked about quite a bit, and other people that are sort of interested in the economy and politics talked about, is how Jeremy Hunt needed to play this for the election. And when I was watching Sky News this evening, and Rachel Reeves, the Labour Chancellor, was on there, and she had nothing to say. You know, Labour now have no policy left that the Conservatives have not delivered on. So from that perspective, it was totally expected that the Tories needed to implement everything that Labour could challenge them on, and they certainly did that. So that wasn't entirely unexpected.
So a budget for political strategy, and a budget for workers, I would say. A budget for small businesses, or?
No.
But
I can't remember the last time that we saw a budget for small business. I think that's the thing. In fact, I'm very annoyed at this one, because everybody is, you know, as much as I think some people would say the 2% national insurance cut is very good because that's money in workers' pockets. Actually, most of our listeners who are directors and take dividends like us will not see a penny of that 2% increase.
No, reduction. I'm devastated because for the second time this year, they've cut taxes in it, and it won't affect me as a business owner. And I guess I would have liked to at least seen a matching of the reduction in national insurance on the employer's side of that as well, rather than the employer still paying their 13 point whatever percent of the salary, and now the employee down to, what is it, what will they be down to, 6% or 8%?
8%.
Yeah, so yeah, very little.
It was,
so,
it's just been cut by 2%, hasn't it? So it's another 2% on top of that. I think the only glimmer of hope that businesses can take from this is that the more money that employees are keeping in their pocket, the less pressure there is on businesses to increase wages. However, with the national minimum wage increase coming in April...
I was going to say, they're forcing that anyway, aren't
they? Yeah, and so. that's the biggest increase there's ever been in national minimum wage, and the only time that it's ever gone up by over £1. So, yeah. That is, like I say, it's a very small glimmer of hope. I'm not really sure that it's something to write home about.
Not for small businesses. So we've been obviously talking about the cut of 2% in national insurance that the Chancellor announced. Didn't decide to touch income tax. I believe that was just far too expensive.
Yeah, and I think the only other significant piece of news for small businesses was with regards to the VAT. Increase. So the threshold went from 85,000 to 90,000, which, you know, if you're a small business, then that means essentially you can keep 20% of that in your pocket for a bit longer. So it's £1,000 impact on a small business, that is. But I mean, really, in the grand scheme of things, it's a drop in the ocean, because I have done an inflation calculator, and if the VAT threshold had kept up with inflation from when it was set in 2017, it should be 108,000. So it's a little bit like the personal allowance levels being held. It's a stealth tax. It's not a celebration either.
It's a drop in the ocean. Interesting graphs that they were putting up on the TV last night. I've seen this graph a few times. Obviously, it's been muted as a cut in taxes. And I think the Chancellor even wrapped it with a fantastic one-liner that it was, in nominal terms, the lowest tax rate that they've had since the 70s. But very clever, because actually, when you look at the graph of personal taxes as a share of GDP, it's almost laughable. I mean, post-war saw the highest percentage share of GDP, and it was up near 38%. We are currently at 36%. That was forecasted to rise by 2028 to 38%. And now, thanks to the Chancellor's changes, that's only going to rise to 37%. So still is going to rise by another percent on all-time highs post-war. But in nominal terms, we're all saving. And why is that, Claire?
Well, it's staggering, isn't it? I mean, it's undoubtedly down to freezing the personal allowance and the brackets at which you change whether you pay like a 20% or 40% tax. And I think it's almost laughable that the Conservatives are trying to convince us that they are a party of low tax. I mean, I am, you could probably describe me as a diehard Tory. I have been known to leaflet drop for the Tories and campaign for them. So it's, I think, quite staggering when even somebody like myself is coming out and being quite anti-Tory with this. But yeah, the rhetoric that this is a low tax government and this is one of the biggest tax giveaways the government's ever done is just a farce, actually. It's just quite embarrassing that they're even trying to convince people that's what it is.
Yeah, I think, you know, just tell people the truth, and we're coming out of COVID, which, you know, has been compared to wartime, and we're looking at a tax take that's similar to getting back on top of that and paying that back. So we are where we are with that, and you know, it's just election headline grabbing bits and pieces they're trying to throw out there. So what else has anything else grabbed your attention, and then we'll work through them one by one and just see if there's anything in there that small businesses can actually use to their effect.
Yeah, so good news is that the fuel duty has been frozen for longer. That is important because, of course, if you're a business, and particularly if you've got sales reps on the road or you have any form of logistics or transport, then fuel costs can be quite a significant element. So that was expected because fuel costs, if they had reversed the 5%, the 5p cut on fuel duty, then that would have pushed inflation up. So it was quite predictable the government were going to do that. But that is good news for businesses because it means that they don't have an increase in travel costs and delivery costs.
Yeah, and they should think about not just if they're running their own trucks or their own distribution company. It actually goes much further than that because most people deliver goods to people's homes now, and that knock-on effect is if you're using any distribution network, you know, any increase in their fuel is just going to get passed on to you as a cost of sale in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, pretty much everything, like you say, everything has distribution. It starts with that, even if you're buying stationery or something like that. So yeah, that's a really good point. Some more bad news, I'd say, is air duty. I think that caught my eye. Air duty is increasing on business class, first class and private jets. Now, unfortunately, we're not flying around in first class jets, but we do know that if you are going to the Middle East or further abroad, then actually sometimes you do need to travel in business class so that you don't need to go and have a full day's rest when you arrive and things like that. So from that perspective, actually, you know, it's called business class for a reason. It's mostly business travelers. So from that perspective, that is also quite anti-business.
Yeah, certainly, and there will be a lot of businesses that do send their people in business class at a certain level, and that again will have a knock-on effect at their cost of sales.
Yeah, absolutely. And also it just makes our BA points much more difficult to use. When you get a companion voucher, it just makes it much more expensive to use.
They're impossible to use anyway.
Yeah, well, that is very true.
The other one I've picked up here is the freezing alcohol duty. So we were talking only a couple of episodes back about the struggle that pubs are having in making a profit in the UK, having already had to put their prices on a pint up over a pound and profit margins shrinking even further. And I think that's only a good thing that we're not just compounding more trouble on that industry at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we spoke about on the last episode as well was around how much the housing market is just generally driving the economy, particularly when you're looking at companies that are going into insolvencies. They're generally related to the housing market. Although there's been no money allocated to it, the government have made a commitment to digitise the planning system. So they're talking about using artificial intelligence to speed up local plans. That's potentially quite positive because applying for any sort of planning permission, you know, even if you want to put a sign up outside your premises, you often need planning permission for it. And that can be a ridiculously lengthy process. Slightly worrying news is that the government is investing £140 million in bolstering its, they call it debt management, but it's essentially debt collection. So they will be tightening on, you know, non-payment of any sort of HMRC amount. So that isn't particularly beneficial. Yeah. I think I would like to see them simplifying the tax system more so it's understandable and also making it easier for people to, you know, for example, pay your pay
Pick
things
phone,
by
yeah.
direct debit and things like that, because still some of their processes and systems are archaic and they don't support business owners.
Apparently the average wait time for HMRC to pick up the phone is 16 minutes, which to me doesn't sound long enough. based on experience.
Oh, God, no. I mean, I'm an accountant. You know, I've spent a lot of my life on the phone to HMRC.
Just waiting.
And you get to about 45 minutes an hour and you just give up because you want to go and get a cup of tea or you just want to do something else and you can't stand the music anymore. So, yeah. It is absolutely ridiculous. It's shocking.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Simon? You mentioned to me about the non-dom. What do you think about that?
Well, before I do that, because this is more for you, Claire, perhaps you can explain to me. One business element was the full expensing that he announced in the autumn statement for businesses has been extended to leased assets for businesses. What does that mean? Is that a good thing for businesses?
I don't think that's quite as it seems, actually. Okay. Now, I must say, I haven't read up about this one, but the way that I heard it delivered, so I might be wrong and I will confirm. I'll do a bit more digging into this and confirm back. But at the moment, you can claim capital allowances on most fixed assets that, you know, plant and machinery. And if you have a finance lease on that asset, so actually a little bit like hire purchase, where at the end of the agreement you own the asset, then you can still claim capital allowances. That's okay. So that's generally what people mean when they refer to leases. Now, actually, what this is referring to is there's a loophole that particularly affects construction businesses that hire out machinery. So they're not allowed to claim capital allowances when, you know, for example, if you're a crane hire company, if you buy the crane, you're not allowed to claim capital allowances because the intention is to lease that crane to other businesses. So that is actually what's been changed. So it's a big, big change for people that are working in the construction industry. And it could also potentially help to bring down the price of equipment higher. But I don't think that that is quite as good as that seems when you first hear it.
Okay. Yeah, I think we need to look into the detail much more on that one.
Yeah.
It was very much a snippet that he covered, but I'd like to understand the detail of that a lot more. So non-dom.
So yes. They finally bit the bullet and did it. Labour have been hulking on about this for forever, really. So it was no surprise, really.
They've only done this for that exact reason, though, haven't they, really? This just completely quashes, Labour's big sort of election policy promise that they're going to raise the money from this to spend elsewhere. What do they do when they can't make that promise?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's not actually going to make a significant difference immediately because it's not going to generate any additional tax revenue next year. And then in the year ending March 26, it will generate 185 million, which although that's a staggering number, it's a drop in the ocean in terms of the government spending. And it's only really, we have to wait till 26, 27 when it kicks in with about 2.5 billion tax income. So, and that's because anybody that this now applies to that opts into this new non-dom status, they basically get 4 years of not having to pay taxes under this scheme. So
it's not an immediate one, is
good
it at all?
I think grabber.
It's a political play, isn't it, rather than a monetary benefit for anybody there. But then the other bits that they've announced is one that we didn't talk about in the predictions was they're abolishing stamp duty for multiple dwellings relief. That's basically, it's a peripheral stamp duty relief. Basically, the premise of that is if you bought an entire block of flats there, you can get a relief off that, that various stamp duty that you get. I think it's down to as low as sort of 0.5%. It's very, very, very generous. It was originally put in place to stimulate investment. Their claim is that there's been no evidence that it's stimulated investment. And in fact, it's probably been abused a bit in different ways. So they're abolishing that. Don't think that makes a huge amount of difference.
Yeah, in fact, mostly the multiple dwellings relief gets used when people are buying properties with annexes, like granny annexes and stuff.
Yeah,
so
I've heard
from that perspective,
it's
not
no
doing
business
much
benefit
to boost the economy, no. Yeah. I did spot in the small print, and I wondered whether this was a little sort of kicking the balls, if you like, back to the post office, because there was a piece, if you are very boring like I am, then you would have read the full documentation. And 5.9 refers to digitizing the communications from courts and tribunal services. And they're going to try and move everything digital because at the moment it's all still paper-based. And it specifically mentions that they're going to bring forward digital reforms to reduce spend on first-class posts. So I wondered whether that was a little sideways kick to the post office with everything that's been going on lately.
Interesting. I mean, you saw a spin on the whole digitization, because you've talked about digitization of a few different government departments, but the big one we haven't talked about is the NHS, which they've made a big play for digitization of the processes there, using AI to bring productivity into the NHS. And quite rightly, you said this is a big opportunity for businesses. There's going to be a lot of government contracts coming out to support that, and if you're in that tech space, this could be a real opportunity for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many small businesses that, you know, the connected supply chain to this as well, it is massive. Like, I've worked with businesses that do like control and automation and electrical components and things like that. And with any sort of digitization system, you need hardware to support the software and the technology. So even if it's just new computers or new servers or anything like that, new cabling. So yeah, anybody who is in that sort of electrical industry or is in IT and tech services, then yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity, because there is literally billions of money being pumped into this in the UK economy right now.
Yeah, I mean, I love the stat that, you know, not a lot of people may know this, but the NHS is the world's second largest employer after the Chinese military. Mm. That just gives you some idea of the scale and the monster that is our NHS, and therefore, you know, the money that's available for businesses to unlock productivity in that.
Yeah, I mean, the NHS, the spend of the NHS, I mean, this is for a different podcast, but the spend of the NHS is nearly £1 billion for every working day. And that is quite staggering. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of money being pumped into the NHS in terms of some of this tech and digitization, but it's probably a drop in the ocean. And I'm not quite sure that it's going to have the impact that we want from a personal perspective on the NHS. But from a business perspective, if you're in those industries, it's a fantastic opportunity. Another unusual one, actually, that stuck out for me, which I thought was quite interesting, was police productivity and technology, and that the government are putting their $230 million into rolling out cutting-edge technology. And one of the things that they said for that is that they will be deploying drones as first responders to police 999 calls,
which I thought was
fascinating.
Yeah, really good.
How would you feel, Simon, if you were under attack and the police sent a drone to you, or you called 999 and you got a drone and not a person?
Yeah. I'd like to understand how the perpetrator would react to the drone first, and whether it would be a deterrent remotely at all. If the drone's kitted with guns like RoboCop or something like that, then it might be slightly more interesting, you know. But given that we're a non-gun country, then I don't think that's going to pass. Maybe a taser, something like that, like built-in tasers.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what it's going to do, other than potentially put eyes on the situation, which means that people aren't wasting their time going there maybe when it's not needed. But I'm sure that somebody will still have to go there and fill out a report anyway. So pen companies and stationery companies, do not worry.
Sure, there's got to be huge benefit as well, just by capturing more evidence on CCTV or cameras built into the drones that can then be used in the court system to actually convict. So that's, you know, there's got to be some benefit there in that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you ever watched some of these, we're going off piece a little bit here, but watch some of these like criminal programs, and they're trying to track perpetrators on CCTV and you can't even read a number plate on it. So it beggars belief that that is the country that we're in at the moment. So yeah, it definitely needs some modernization.
I think they could just start by having one hovering outside every Wetherspoons in the country to start with, and then just, you know, capturing what's going on there. Because the Wetherspoons staff have like these little cameras on, don't they? Because it's, you know, to sort of protect themselves. So maybe that's where it needs to be utilized. Final couple of bits and pieces. Again, one potentially helpful for business owners that are also have children and staff is the child benefit tax, which is, I think it's controversial. It's deeply unfair. And anyone I talk to struggles with this. And it's about the single person, once they earn over £50,000, they lose the child benefit. And, you know, you can have two people that are earning a certain amount, but if that one earns over £50,000, they take it, you've got to pay it back. It's very, very convoluted, very complicated. They're raising that threshold to £60,000, but they're also going to bring in a shared household income element to that to make that much, much fairer, which I just think is the right thing to do. It's not going to set the world alight, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and certainly the impact that businesses see on that is that that is very detrimental to particularly women, let's face it, going back into the workplace. Sure. So it should hopefully help to encourage people back into the workplace because work should pay. So from that perspective, that could also have quite a positive impact on businesses as well. That aligned with the changes we saw last time about free childcare places.
Yes.
And how that's been funded as well. So yeah, that should be quite a big change to family life in the UK. We haven't seen the impact of it yet, but I think hopefully in 5 to 10 years' time, it will be a completely different situation for young families when they're thinking about whether work pays or not.
Yeah, and they're certainly getting behind this element of supporting people with families so that both parties can work and contribute to the economy and drive productivity. It's obviously a key area that they've identified as wanting to do. So hopefully that does, again, pay dividends for small business owners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the final thing that we haven't mentioned is around furnished holiday lets and the abolishment of some taxes that give them an unfair advantage over long-term buy-to-let properties.
We predicted this one as well, didn't we? And it's exactly what they said. They're just abolishing the holiday lettings regime. That will just mean that all those tax advantages of running the property as a short-term let disappear. I guess that, you know, they're saying exactly what we expect to say, which is, isn't this a great thing? Because we're just going to push these properties back into the long-term rental market. Do you know what counteracts that completely? Is when he came out and announced that capital gains tax is being slashed from 28% to 24%. So do you know what I'd do?
Only for housing as well.
That was in the
fine print. So yeah, they are encouraging.
Well, that rate, that 28% rate is for assets, isn't it? It's for asset disposal specifically. So
housing. The disposal of properties. It specifically says that in the legislation that it's reduced for the disposal of property.
So it just feels interesting here. So again, in a government pincer movement, they say, you know, Mr. Landlord doing the furnished holiday let, either pay us the tax through keeping it or put it back into the long-term rental market and pay the tax that way, or do you know what? You probably think now's the time to sell it because we've just given you another 4% off that you've had for 20 years. It's probably a decent chunk of money. Challenges with that is, as we talked about last week, there's already a massive shortage of properties in the long-term sector. And it's all right saying that push them out the holiday let sector into the long-term, but actually to then put an incentive for them to sell all their assets just seems madness. So I think there's more coming. Watching the next few years, there's got to be something coming around the rental market, because the supply there is only going in one direction, and they keep pulling more policy levers to drive that even further. So I'll be keen to watch that one.
But just to clarify on this one, the expectation is that this applies to properties in your personal name. So if you own a holiday let in a limited company, for example, then certainly the way that the policy has been worded, it doesn't look like that's applying to limited companies. It looks like it applies to properties in your personal name only. But as with anything with this budget, it is literally a headline at the moment, and the detail and the actual policy changes in the wording of it needs to follow.
Yeah, the problem
and
is...
And it's also not clear. They've left the wording as furnished holiday lets. They'll look to level the playing field. It's not clear if there will be any impact on business rates as well versus council tax. That has been left out and not commented on.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you move it out of the chances are that people have got them in their own names, and they're doing what they did originally with landlords, which is, okay, great. If it was in a limited company, you probably wouldn't have moved into the holiday let because you'd be deducting your tax anyway, and it'd still be probably just about profitable and working for you. You're not going to be able to move the property into a limited company because of the stamp duty that you would have to pay to do that transaction, plus the capital gains tax element to do that as well. So that wouldn't be worth your while element either. So it does kind of, it's a predicament, isn't it, for people who have them in their own names in that sector at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it really is quite a bit of an unknown at the moment. But yeah, it's a worry. I guess it's a worrying time for anybody that does have a holiday let. But I am quite sure that there will be somebody that comes out with some weird and wonderful ways to potentially avoid this. I think the thing with holiday lets is because it's classed as a trade, actually the VAT threshold applies. So you can't really have too many holiday lets before VAT comes in and actually kind of strips out a lot of the tax benefits anyway. Yeah. Whereas when you're on a long-term let, just like letting a home to tenants that live in it, then VAT doesn't apply to property. So it's actually quite a worrying, I guess, if you're in an industry, in a trade or a business that is in the hospitality industry, particularly tourism, then it probably is quite worrying with a few things that we've seen in this latest update, because not only are holiday lets going to become less easy to get, which means prices are probably going to go up and there's going to be fewer tourists coming. You know, we've seen, I talked about the air duty on business class flights. So that's all of the affluent customers not coming to the UK anymore either because the flights are too expensive. And also the tax relief on shopping was not reintroduced either. The government just made a very wishy-washy statement about reviewing it and keeping it under review. So yeah, it's no doubt that there will be an impact on the travel and tourism industry in particular in the UK, right, which, let's face it, is the lifeblood of some towns and cities in this country, you know, seaside towns in particular. So
not a huge amount of positive things in there for businesses. A few interesting takeaways that you might be able to leverage there. Thanks for listening today to our budget analysis. And next week, normal service will be resumed with our new story of the week, our deep dive of the week, where we can go through the various education to help upskill you in your business and Profit Cash Growth Extra, which I struggle to say every week, so I don't know why we keep calling it that anyway. And as usual, if you want to see more of Claire, go to profitcashgrowth.com, YouTube, Profit Cash Growth, and you can find her on all of the other socials, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks, guys.